Hey, it's Elisa Monjadas, Managing Director of Stories Bureau, and this is my co-host, Creative Director of Stories Bureau.
Hey, everyone, I'm Corey Grushka, and this is B2B Creatively, where we want to talk about all things B2B creative, from trends to best practices, campaigns that succeeded.
So that all of us together can learn how to be creatively.
If you're a marketer, you'll learn how to be more creative, and if you're a creative, we're going to make you more strategic.
I have a story for you, Corey.
All right, start.
I didn't get a chance to talk to you about this, but yesterday I was interviewing a potential subcontractor for a project that we're pitching, and I asked her if she had very specific experience and examples in a certain area, and she said, no, but I know I could do it, and also I have ChatGPT, and I can figure it out. Like, I'm smart, and she really super smart woman with all the credentials, but not the exact thing I needed. Mm-hmm. And I found myself
story of
like,
our lives, by the way.
That's still not what we need. Like, I told her, I was like, I can use ChatGPT on this project too. But like, if you had told me, I would have been like, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
let's just do it. But someone who I don't really know talking about how their use of AI, like, I didn't trust the person. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's we could give them a try. I don't know. It's always, everybody has different competencies when it comes to AI. You know that I'm like fairly obsessed and a power user. It's a best friend of mine. And so it really depends how effective this person is and how much her skills can translate.
But then how do you know how someone's AI skills are?
You got to use them, right? And ask, you know, I don't know. You don't. It's just how effective they are. I mean, like, where we're heading in general, and our guest today knows this, is like an AI-enabled world. Like, I forget what's the famous quote. Like, AI is not going to replace you, but somebody that's really good at using AI is going to replace you. That's the medium term anyway. So, yeah, I mean, it would be great to have somebody that has exactly the right skill set and can use AI. But I guess in the absence of that, if they're a power user, we could take it. All that being said, our guest today is a power user. And a topic that
the
is
best
near
of both
to my
worlds
heart.
Here, our yes. guest.
Best of both worlds, yeah. A frequent collaborator, a friend, young, up and coming director, producer in Hollywood, who's working on a bunch of vehicles of his own, and is deep in the AI scene that I think it'll be a really interesting conversation around AI and video.
Hi, my name is Noah Wagner, and I'm a director, creative director, and filmmaker specializing in live action and AI. I come from a post background, editing background originally, and in addition to all my traditional directing, you know, across commercials and narrative and branded content, I've been doing a lot in the AI world, really over the last 10 years. I've been making films about the subject and doing heavy research in that area, and then over the last five, since the tools have come out, I've leaned very, very heavily into it, including it into my process and workflow, but not at the expense of all the really great live action and human things that we do. So it's finding that balance, which I'm sure we'll dive into today.
We will. And I think you're selling yourself short. Big names in your background, HBO and a bunch of other big names professionally. And you know, a beta tester and pretty well connected with a bunch of the different AI platforms. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I went to NYU for film originally. And then I worked at HBO for about a decade after that. Writing, producing, directing, editing, shooting, concepting, interviewing. For all of their ancillary content, all of their promotional content across every type of programming. So Game of Thrones, Westworld, Silicon Valley, Ballers, big boxing matches, documentaries, that kind of thing. Was really kind of served as my graduate school in so many ways, because I was basically being paid to observe the best directors and the best showrunners out there, and then got to and pick their brains as well, and then got to kind of implement that on the nights and weekends with my own kind of freelance directing life. And then, yeah, as far as the we're jumping a real gap in time, but as far as the AI is concerned, yeah, I've had the certainly had the privilege of being an alpha tester for Sora, for Moon Valley, which just came out this week, and Luma, Runway, Minimax, Kling, kind of, and more, being in their creative partner programs and getting kind of to give feedback on the tools and take them for a spin before the general public kind of gets to dive in.
I'm pumped to get wonky on the AI video stuff. I've told you this before, but your kind of like B2C promotional background was such a it's like a breath of fresh air in the B2B world, which is where we operate, because it's all the same skill sets. I think, like, especially the promotional stuff that you've done and you still do, and I think that's why, like, your stuff is so rad, especially when it comes to B2B for in our world.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think the fundamentals are the exact same. I mean, whether I'm, to your point, whether I'm working on a trailer, whether I'm working on a commercial, whether I'm working on a short film or a feature that I'm currently, in development on, it's all kind of, it comes down to storytelling. Everything has its own flavor and pace and rhythm. But it's all in service of the exact same thing. And even with AI, as it, comes into the fore, like the fundamentals really haven't changed. And so, I'm sure we'll get into all of the pros of B2B specifically, but I honestly think anything we talk about that we're talking about B2B, I'm really drawing from a B2C place, and there it's pretty universal.
Which is where the cutting edge of B2B is anyway, like
Yeah.
bringing people in, talent like yourself, to do stuff that is not normally done. At least I have 1,000 questions, but why don't you go so I don't monopolize this
I
conversation.
was going to get into the B2B space. Like, does it feel different for you, Noah? Like, when do you feel trapped? That's the real question when you're
Do I
doing
feel
B2B. Yeah, like
trapped
trapped
when doing B2B?
creatively.
No, it's its own genre, I think. And what I think is exciting on the B2B front, which you don't run into on B2C, is because whenever I've done like sizzles for prospective projects or my films or whatnot, there's a lot of carryover in terms of we can use any music we want, we can use any footage we want, we can break all the rules because you don't have to worry about the legalities of like it's going out into the world. You have to cross your T's and dot your I's. You're just trying to disseminate information internally, in many cases for big, high stakeholder presentations and things like that. And so you actually have a lot more creative freedom, to flex. On the flip side is a limited audience. So, but it's a targeted audience, and it can be really, really fun. So yeah, that's kind of the difference between that and like B2C.
Yeah, I would say by the time it gets to you in the process, like you have pretty clear direction, like who is this for? What's this purpose? You don't really have to figure it out. It's like with the container is set for you, and then you can be creative within that container.
Yeah, I mean, again, it both like B2B and B2C in both cases, however it's coming and filtering, because I wear many hats across my career. So the first step is especially on creative directing or EPing a project, is understanding the creative problems that are being solved, understanding what the information that needs to be disseminated in the pieces. And then kind of boiling that down into, okay, what do we want to do creatively? B2B is the exact same thing. If anything, there are more metrics and more infographics that need to sort of be crafted in B2B than there ever is in B2C. There's more foreign language in a sense. What's been really interesting on the B2B side is, I know, especially as you guys have kind of brought me into the fold on many different brands and getting under the hood, there is a like a unique language for each industry and even within each work culture, and you have to, as an outsider, come in and translate that within that same foreign language to their team using buzzwords for me that I'm like, oh, I have to kind of learn some of these keywords and this jargon. so that it feels organic, you know, for the company that's having the meeting or doing the presentation.
That's on the internal side, but right. Yeah, I mean, it's by its very nature more complex information, and telling a story with complex information than like selling surfboards on Instagram or whatever.
Totally.
So no, let's talk AI. So where are we with AI? So we've talked some, I've tested most of the names that you mentioned, Kling, and I've used them for testing various things, like from lip syncing to character animation to, you know, text to video, but give us kind of like high level lay of the land from your perspective. Where is AI and video today, basically, capabilities wise?
Sure. Yeah, I can only speak from my perspective, certainly. I think it's such an existential evolution to our industry, and I think everyone's trailblazing it currently, which is what's so exciting about it, honestly.
In your circles, I don't think that's necessarily true.
I do sometimes think anywhere. That I'm in a little bit of a bubble.
You are.
And so I maybe have a little bit of a blind spot to, increasingly less blind to, like, how the average person is viewing AI versus me. I'm already disillusioned with certain things that other people are really excited by. Like I'm like very, you know, that's why I keep on pushing and pushing and pushing, because I want to wow people and try new things and you know, experiment. There's so much. I was having a conversation yesterday with someone. There's so much low-hanging fruit that has regrown on this tree. You know, traditional. Oh, I guess traditional is a funny word for it. The most recent traditional, pre-AI, I feel like a lot of the low-hanging fruit had been plucked. And it was getting a little tired, and we're all kind of rinsing and repeating, and we're all trying to push the envelope, but boy, was it hard to stand out and be original. And now with this new technology, not only is the out-of-the-box stuff interesting, but it's you can just take all you've learned and remix it and do new workflows and new creative approaches to things that you've never could before, and that's really, really invigorating, really, really empowering. So as far as like where the industry is currently, obviously, there's a lot of, I guess, to use the tech, you know, the Silicon Valley term, a lot of disruption going on. But I think that word has a bad connotation, because I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity. I think there is a lot of opportunity. I think there's going to be, no doubt about it, a lot of evolution. People obviously are rightfully concerned about job loss. And I think when we're talking about bigger brands that are, and corporations that are looking to let go a lot of people in favor of agents as a way to make even more profits. Obviously, we all want to, you know, make a buck, but I still believe in teamwork, human and computer integration. But on the flip side, it is so exciting from like a indie perspective, or from a creator empowerment perspective, that you can do so much. So there is a lot of evolution, but to your point, Corey, I think you got to integrate AI into what you're doing to have a level up, but you got to keep that head on your shoulder. You cannot farm out and outsource too much of the intellectual and creative thinking.
Noah, we have creative teams, like brand teams that we work with, that are all for AI, but they have the challenge of selling that into like higher management and all of that, because of some of the things you said, like job replacement or people replacement, or in our case, like agency replacement. And you said it was a real threat. And we know, we've seen the news, like all the Microsoft layoffs. There's a lot of things in there. The companies that are doing these layoffs are very clear about what they're doing. So how would you help someone like a brand manager trying to sell, like, hey, we have this agency who's going to do 50 videos every month for us using AI. Like, how would you sell that in?
That I have to answer something bigger before I can really target it on that, because I actually think there's a real disservice in the perception around. There's a perception problem and a PR problem around AI right now. Not necessarily, I mean, these the obvious ones that we've already talked about, but as from the creative side and the creator side, there's a real devaluing when you see the things on Instagram or whatever about like, hey, I made this thing in a weekend in my underwear for $50. Hollywood is cooked. It is a true devaluation. As someone who is deep in that world, David Lynch said, I think, just because everyone has a pencil doesn't mean they can draw. And you need to, I think I'm paraphrasing it, but you know, I think you cannot undervalue the humans that are still using the tools in order to get to where they're getting to. You still have a team that you have to work with, and there's not like an easy button. I need to dispel the notion that you just click the easy button and like you get a $50 amazing video. No, it's still a team sport. I really think you're more maximizing your spend as opposed to like cutting it by like, you know, 90%. So I wouldn't even walk in the door saying, hey, I can mass produce these videos for a small little fraction and they're all going to be incredible, because again, it just devalues what we're doing and it isn't realistic. Good, fast, cheap pick two is still, an axiom that I subscribe to, even with AI.
Yeah. So on that front, so going back to like, where is it, right? Like the last time I really got deep on the video side, I'm pretty involved on the non-video side, images, text, and so forth. But on the video side, I probably did a deep dive like 3-4 months ago. Kling, Sora, you know, like maybe 2 or 3 others that I experimented with. And my take was, it's still janky. Like it's not just that there's no easy button, there's only hard buttons, right? Like your ability to go text to video, you don't know what you're going to get. The control over the product is questionable. Your ability to, at the time, replicate your results. I created a character, and I know that there's ways to hack it and ways to do it, but like you created a character to have the character in 50 different environments and 50 different, I know there's ways to do it, but it's still, I don't think, an easy button, but I'm curious to get your thoughts. And then also even like the video to video stuff, everything seemed a little early. Like it was for kind of pro users that, to your point, can integrate it into workflows and really hack it and have teams of like animators and editors and producers and writers and directors that are really just kind of like using it to like you said, to maximize, optimize, right? Like how much closer have we gotten, or how close are we to the easy button? You know what I mean? Like, where are we? That's what I'm saying when I say editing wise, post-production, animation, generating stuff from tech, like where are we today? Because to me, it was janky 4 months ago.
Yeah. I mean, we're not hurtling towards an easy button. Period. So I want to reframe that. But as far as to your point about like the jankiness and whatnot, it's improving every day, and even not just the quality of the output, but the dexterity of the tools that use those video models. And it's been, what's great is there's a real kind of very inclusive arms race between all the different tools to the benefit of all of us users, where someone comes out with this revolutionary way to interact with the tool and get more precision and control, and then all the other tools kind of match it. But to your point, what I'm able to do is, because I'm able to pull on my traditional knowledge, both in terms of like the fundamentals and ideals of storytelling, but also on a very minute technical level, editing, compositing, just thinking about visual effects and how to think about all that stuff together. You know, I've already had to do that. And a lot of, you know, filmmakers of my generation have been needing to do that, you know, over the last 15 years. And now we have this new tool that can kind of level up the playing field even more.
So in the B2B context, you do a lot of like product software demos, you do a lot of like B-roll type stuff, you see a lot of text, animated text on screen. Like even text on screen that animates, and do you have a lot of control today with the tools that you have?
Yeah. So, I mean, the real hurdle that we're working on, by we, I mean just collectively, the industry is, in at least on the AI side, is that level of continuity and cohesion from shot to shot to shot. Because I'm sure, as everyone has been seeing to date, most of it is, at the end of the day, montage-y. You can do a really polished thing, because that is a style of storytelling. And so at the highest level, you can do some really fascinating stuff. Music video is a really great place for it too. So I know, like, Corey, I know you and I have talked about, you know, because I know how precise in particular you are with your motion graphics. Which is to the great benefit of everything that Stories does. And so in order to integrate AI, it's not a replacement for what you're doing, but it sort of right now can expedite pieces or improve, you know, the artistic approach, the vision for it. It can, again, it's more maximizing than it is replacing. Do I think we're on a trajectory where, like, it keeps getting closer and closer and closer to what we're able to do personally? I do, but I think this is going to reframe what makes us unique. And that's true existentially with AI as humans, and also creatively in terms of what stories are we trying to tell. That's really, it's just going to be story, story, story. Because, you know, I noticed when I was in film school, like, everyone had a Canon 5D, to not to date myself, but you know, just because everyone and everyone could post to YouTube and all that, and just because everyone has a camera, everyone has an iPhone, everyone has access to all these quality tools, does not mean that proportionately we have more incredible storytelling. We have more opportunities. Anyone has the opportunity to level up their skills, but it still takes craftsmanship in order to get there.
Yeah, my gut with AI and video, I said this to you, I think, before, Noah, is that today there's, especially like for B2B, the kind of stuff we do, the only use cases for video AI that I see today are the just like churning out crap like that is a very little control and is just scale of honestly just like pollution versus like relatively high touch, like very much human in the loop and managing and owning. And it's the middle path that is that easy button, which I don't think exists. I don't even know that it exists, like, even in, let's say, editing. Like, how sophisticated are the editing tools like today with video? You know, like,
they can help with some really, you know? They can help with organization. They can help with some really rudimentary first cuts on like talking heads. But I wouldn't sit, like, I think I'm very open-minded to what AI can do in every capacity as time goes along. So, but at least at present, I think editing is such a crucial piece of the storytelling that connects. Cause at the end of the day too, like, you got to think about what is all this content for that we're making, regardless of the medium. It's for human to connect with another human. And I am coming from a place of like narrative storytelling, and that applies to commercial, and that even applies to B2B, because at the end of the day, I'm a person that works at a corporation that's trying to disseminate information to my team. And so, and they are all humans too. You know, it's important to, despite all the jargon, to still treat each other like people. And so, and to communicate as people too. And so you need to kind of reach out and touch them with whatever information or emotion or whatever you're trying to do. And so, which is why you need a person on either end, kind of shepherding and navigating and directing all that to do. Once you start hitting automate, you know, we either become sheep or we're smarter than that. Which is why I just think it's kind of like a zero sum game with that stuff.
Yeah, I think the problem is, like, by the time, again, in the two paths, the middle is the easy button. But by the time that happens, when there is an easy button and it gets really democratized, maybe not for like the average person, that's far off, I think. Like, for the average person to be able to produce a sick documentary with the press of a button. But like, even for professionals, you know, to press a button and get your pre-production and production done, and then another button for post-production and bam, you have like a sick video. By the time that happens, we have the problematic situation where it's just going to be it already is an explosion of video content, but it's just going to be when everybody can do it, everybody can do it, right? And then even then, the separator is going to be storytelling and creative vision and stuff like that and taste.
How much YouTube and Netflix do you watch? What proportion of what's on there do you watch? It's a fraction. And I, I'm someone who loves movies, and I watch fewer and fewer things because I'm less and less impressed, and I'm like really discerning. And also, I only have so much time. And so similarly, once everyone, again, it happened when YouTube came out. Increasingly, everyone had a camera. Everyone made content. You can't watch all of it. But also, you have increasingly younger audiences are only watching YouTube. So, okay, that's where it's at. So you'll have a lot of AI things that are watched, but at minimum, what was prompted? At minimum, like, is it just self-automating? You know, I just think that's, again, a race to the bottom. And I think once everyone's doing it, it devalues everything. And then it's all about what's the differentiating factor.
What is the cream that rises to the top, even in that saturated world? There'll be something.
What stands out? What's weird? Yeah. What's riffing on the status quo? Everyone just wants something new.
All right. So, Noah, tell us about... So, what's in your AI video tech stack? Tell us about the layers of the tech stack.
Sure. I mean, people always ask, what one tool do you use to make what you make? And I always have to reply the same. It's like, it isn't one. It's all of them in different ways, because every single one of them has their strengths, and those strengths change every couple of months. You know, if it's something you might feel like is like lacking on one tool, in, you know, March of 2025 has now become the best tool in July of 2025. And that keeps happening to the benefit of all of us creators. So, you know, it depends what I'm trying to do. I think it's a lot of the tools that everyone has been talking about. You know, to name a few, Google, Runway, Luma, Sora, Moon Valley, Kling, Minimax, then a lot of stuff that's like kind of open source custom on, you know, using Comfy UI and other things. It's using, you know, tool suites that have a lot of the APIs of these tools in them, like FreePic or Kria, Midjourney, ChatGPT to organize your thoughts.
Midjourney is starting to do video. Is that right?
Oh yeah. They've been doing it for a few weeks now.
Okay. Noah, last question for you. What I see from everything that you post on LinkedIn, which I'm so happy you're there, because for the B2B folks, that's our spot. But it looks like you're just having so much fun exploring and experimenting with AI. I just saw your Five Guys video that you did. Like, what has been the thing that has most surprised you about this journey into AI?
Well, it's first of all, it's funny you mentioned the LinkedIn of it all. You know, as a filmmaker, Instagram has typically been my like business card and vice versa. But then in the AI world, because I think the tech influence as well, LinkedIn is where it's at. So don't worry, we're sharing that turf currently.
Great.
So all the good stuff is going there. Yeah,
AI,
you know,
video community is really gravitating to LinkedIn.
I follow all the AI influencers I follow are on LinkedIn more than because it's really like gross on like the other platforms. You're getting like the janky.
It's thoughtful.
And that's my experience.
Yeah, it's been fun to marry that world. And one thing to say about the AI community, at least right now, is it is so warm and welcoming, and everyone's playing, everyone's experimenting. It's refreshing given the state of things. I think one thing I learned a handful of years ago was I really started leaning into the AI of it all, because I've never really leaned into a quote unquote, it wasn't a trend. I didn't lean into it because it's a trend. It just has felt so intuitive, and I have felt such clarity with it. And I think your feelings about AI, one's feelings about AI, are proportionate to one's self-assuredness regarding your creative voice. I think if you are insecure deep, deep down, whether you know it or not, you're probably going to feel some level of triggered by AI in general. And I think if you're feeling really self-assured in your creative voice, it's only empowering. And it's a spectrum. It's not black and white. I feel both of those things all the time. But it is the reason that like you're catching that playfulness is I feel like I've got an extra like limb, an extra what's the best way to put it? Like I can express what's been in my head for all these years using the tools that I have is remove frictions from my own personal process. And so that Five Guys thing, for instance, I couldn't have made before, or I would have thought it, but I would have told you and you would have giggled and that would have been it. But then I got to actually spend extra time. I got to like make it, you know, and fill it out and then riff on things that I was doing. And now it's its own fully fledged thing that we can kind of share as like a social currency and like have a laugh about. And honestly, one thing I really realized, I do not think this is news to anyone in the branding world, but I think I'm just arriving at this realization is, you know, decades ago, we had water cooler talk about a show that we were all watching or the news that we could all agree on. And we're also like niched out now. And I think one of the only things that we all get to share still is, and like the currency of culture is brand. And so making something like this Five Guys thing, which was in response to something that Popeyes did and McDonald's did and Wendy's did, was like, well, okay, the reason that I think it transcends a little bit more is we all have an experience with these different brands. We all have an association with those brands. They're fun brands, but we get to riff on our shared experience and baggage we're bringing to it. And so now we get to kind of share a laugh. It's the closest thing to an inside joke that like society gets to have, just because we're all so in our little niches. It is just so, I've kind of related it to like, you ever seen those TikTok videos of kids who are deaf who get cochlear implants for the first time and then they can hear and they're like basically crying because they're like able to experience an additional sense. I can't say I've shed tears over it, but I've definitely felt the sensation of like, wow, I can finally express myself. It's easier now. I don't need, you know, tremendous millions of dollars to do a film. I still am a big believer in hybrid approaches. That's what I'm most interested in. Live action, accentuated and amplified by what we can do with AI. And that's a whole nother rabbit hole we could go down. But that's where I think it's really, really at in order to really connect on a human level.
That's amazing. I feel like we could go down, like we could talk for like 3 more hours here.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
I mean, I could, and I know I see Corey like.
I'm ready with multiple questions and comments, but I'll save them for another time. No, I really appreciate your time, man. Always a pleasure to chat, and especially in this forum.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you, Noah.
And you can find me on LinkedIn.
Yes.
It's just at Noah Wagner. And then I'm on Instagram is where I'm most active. It's at Work of Arc, because I had the bright idea in high school that, you know, just like Spike Lee has the Spike Lee joint, I'm like, yeah, Noah should have a Work of Arc. So it's been
that's
like
amazing.
Like
I gotta follow
a high
you.
School, a childhood joke that has blossomed.
B2B Creatively is powered by Stories Bureau. This episode was produced by Alexandra Uresta with help from Mather DeLeon. It was engineered and mixed by Tim Ballant and edited by Joshua Ramsey. If you like what you hear, go follow Stories Bureau on LinkedIn, where Elisa, Corey, and the rest of the team are dishing out tips all week long. Or maybe check out storiesbureau.com. Sign up for our newsletter, and that'll keep you up to date on all the latest trends and best practices in the B2B creative, design, and marketing worlds. Oh, and of course, follow us on YouTube and your favorite podcast platform to get more creative convos like this delivered straight to your feed every month. That's it for this one. So until next time, thanks for listening.